Welcome to Star Trek Comic Book Review. Our several-year mission will be to boldly go where no podcast has gone before. We will be reviewing every Star Trek comic book ever published. These stories have been released by Gold Key, Marvel, DC, Malibu, Wildstorm, Tokyo Press, IDW, and others. Star Trek and all that the Star Trek universe contains is copyrighted by CBS Studios, Inc.
Hello and welcome to Star Trek Comic Book Review with Donovan and Ken. Episode number 431, recorded September 1st, 2024.
And today we're doing a Star Trek Presents and continuing off the Rick and Morty versus Dungeons and Dragons Volume 1. So this is issues 3 and 4.
Right. So wrapping up the story, we get to see the full arc of the story presented in this episode. Yay.
Yep. Indeed.
And it does get better as it goes along, in my opinion.
Yeah, I enjoyed these two issues. Mm-hmm. I mean, I didn't hate the first two issues, but I think I like these two issues better.
There were parts of the first issue I was like, meh, I'm not entertained. But then as it went along, it got better. And then it's really does the crescendo in these. Although I will mention that thinking back on some bits of the ending, which I thought was good. It was good. It got a little bit of emotions going in me, which was good. So it did its job, but you know, obviously the writers, all good writers, manipulate the audience to some degree. So after thinking about it more after I was done, I just had a few comments.
Cool. I look forward to hearing them.
But I did enjoy it. So let's get back to this one, though.
Yeah.
So Rick and Morty.
And it does have a couple of Star Trek references, which I liked.
They continue to have Star Trek references. I do like that, too. I agree. So obviously the people writing this, penning this, are our fans.
Right.
Okay, I get to do the first one. I have issue number 3. And of course, we read this as part of the compilation, the graphic novel. And this one's title is Part 3 Reality Bites, and then in parentheses, for 3D6 plus 1.
And you know what that means, of course, right?
Okay, so they did different editions of Dungeons & Dragons? Or is that what that is?
Three D6 means that you roll a D6 three times. So a six-sided dice, you roll it three times, and then you plus one means you add one. So whatever your total is of those three dice plus one is your total for how hard reality is going to bite you here.
Okay, sounds good.
Yes. So when you get hit by something, it'll always say, you know, like if you get bit by a monster, the monster's bite has, and then it'll tell you what the damage is. You roll
and then
X amount
and then
of
that
dice.
Really,
right. Yeah, and then that's how many hit points you lose due to that bite.
Okay.
So I thought it's a funny title.
Good. A totally in-game title, because I had no idea exactly what it was. Okay. Thank you for the explanation. So the individual graphic novel was published November 28th. No, the original issue, I think I have this right, was published November 18. I could have that wrong. The graphic novel was published March 2019. Creative team. Everything's the same, but let me repeat it again since this is the first book of this particular episode. Patrick Rothfuss and Tim Zub are the writers. Artist Troy Little, who does a great job, by the way. Colorist Leonardo Ito. Letterer Robbie Robbins. Series edits Chase W. Marotz and David Hedgecock and Sarah Gatos and Ari Yarwood. Lots of series editors. Rick and Morty created by Justin Roiland and Dan Harmon. Collection edits Justin Isinger and Alonzo Simon. Collection design, Robbie Robbins and Sean Lee. Publisher, Chris Ryle. Okay, we got four covers. Cover A features Rick and Morty moving through a partially opened double doors thing and looking down at a short little gray-haired guy in red and orange clothes. Rick is not happy to see the little fella at all, but Morty is smiling and apparently entertained by the wise-looking little fella. Art by Troy Little. And of course, we'll find out who he is when we get in the book. Cover B features Beth's D&D character sheet. In the lower right-hand corner, Beth is drawn as a wily-looking wood elf cleric, level 6 character, holding a beefy-looking mace in both hands and a dangerous and wicked grin on her face, like she knows something. To her left are the details of Beth's character, all filled in. Art by Troy Little. Retailer Incentive Cover A presents Morty blushing with love over a little baby owl he picked up and is hugging. The little baby owl's large and pissed off mother is behind Morty and about to attack. Look out, Morty. Art by Sarah Richard.
That's not an owl.
It's an owl.
It's an owl bear. Get it right.
Okay, it does have claws at the end of the wings, I guess.
Okay. Owl bear.
Okay, whatever. Retailer and Center Cover B presents Jerry for once drawn as the conquering hero who killed a giant ogre by putting a bloody hole in his middle. Beth is looking at him as her hero as Summer and Morty are looking on with approval. Rick and his loot are looking angry as he looks down upon the scene. Art by Tess Fowler. After being snapped out of Rick's D&D holodeck and back into the garage lab where Jerry is cooking meat in a George Foreman grill, Morty angrily demands to know what happened. Rick replies saying there is no way a grandson of his is going barred. He goes on to say the Alan Adale protocol kicked in automatically and ended the program. And there was nothing he could do about it. Rick knocks Jerry's George Foreman grill over onto the ground, which draws no reaction from Jerry whatsoever. Jerry, recognizing they all came back from a D&D outing, asks the still-upset Morty whether he had fun playing D&D. Surprised, Morty asks if his father plays. Jerry says yes and displays quite a bit of gamer knowledge and proposes he take the kids on a D&D outing on his weekend with them. Rick objects and uses a freeze ray on Jerry. Morty, Beth, and Summer strongly object to their popsicled pop. Morty pulls his trump card and uses his right to pick every 10th adventure. He chooses a family D&D outing with the whole family, including Jerry. Oh, and Jerry gets to be a wizard. Rick relents and unfreezes Jerry. Morty tells Rick to just send them back to the holodeck, but Rick says the failsafe ended that simulator. There's no going back. Morty, Beth, and Summer all chip in ideas suggesting how Rick could sort through an infinite number of realities until he finds one where D&D is actually how the world works, and they can mess around there for a while. Rick is not happy about this request, but he shoos all of them out of his garage lab while he comes up with something. Sometime later, Rick takes them through a demon snakehead shaped portal into an alternate dimension that is a near duplicate of D&D 5th edition that he invites them to call the Forgotten Realms. Rick says he will not pick a character, but instead will be their safari guide to coach them and keep them from getting ganked by a bugbear. When suddenly the voice of the real Dungeon Master tells Rick that is not an honor he can take. The Dungeon Master alternates his appearance between a gray-haired hobbit-looking guy and a teenage guy in a black t-shirt and baseball cap. He quickly defeats Rick's attempts to protect himself from having a character chosen for him. So everybody gets to be the character they want. Jerry indeed becomes a wizard named Kier Bravia, as per his dumbass wishes. Beth becomes a wood elf priestess of ill matter named Lion, Amaranthia, with a dash of sexy Liv Tyler elf added. Summer becomes a badass ranger with a bow and arrow main weapon and a sword at her side for backup. Morty thinks he wants to be a half-orc rogue, and Jerry helps him to take on a character that is like it would like what it would be like if Han Solo and Batman had a baby. Dizzy and pissed off, Rick asks the Dungeon Master, what has he done? Dungeon Master says just what all Dungeon Masters do. I help guide players to their destiny, to become their true selves. Rick is too pissed off to say, so he uses his portal gun to escape to a drinking place to drown his sorrows, but he finds it does not work. The Dungeon Master confirms Jerry's assumption. They will leave when their mission is over and sort of do a quantum leap thing. The Dungeon Master tells Rick if he does not pick a character, one will be picked for him. Apparently the DM's patience is already at an end, and he turns Rick into G. Willikers Patellabut, a short, gray-haired, part-elf bard who is highly unlikely to get laid on this or any sort of adventure. They begin their adventure walking towards a village named Canton. Rick warns all of them that this is a real place. They can die, and Rick has no technology with which to save their sorry butts. A man carrying a wounded woman comes out of the forest asking for help. Beth instinctively goes to the woman's aid. Jerry tells the kids to give their mother cleric time to heal the stranger by becoming big damned heroes. Sure enough, a giant orc wielding a primitive double-bladed axe comes crashing through the trees and attacks. Despite their instinctual hesitancy to trust their father in a fighting situation, they follow his lead, and in the end, they all contribute to the clean ogre kill. A second giant ogre emerges from the woods and throws two spears, one at Summer and one at Morty. Jerry uses his wizard powers to conjure arcane ward shields of protection that saves Summer completely, but only partially saves Morty. He gets grazed. Jerry runs to wounded Morty's side as Beth summons up holy fire that she uses to smite the ogre. The threat vanquished, they find out the couple they saved had a baby who was stolen by the ogres. Their quest is to save the baby. The couple report they found the ogre village, but were chased away for so long that they don't know how to get back. Summer says she can track anything and leads the way to save the baby. On the walk, Morty and Jerry have a bonding chat about D&D and life. They camp for the night, and late by the fire, Beth and Jerry have a bonding conversation that was totally non-sexual. They continue on and fight an angry-looking human-sized frog with a spear while Rick drinks booze from a Boda bag and makes snide comments. They finally come upon the ogre village that they survey from a high precipice. Far from a primitive village, they even manage to block off the creek that runs through the village with a stone dam. Morty says he sees smaller people that look different from the ogres. Summer says they are half ogres and goes on to say they are all monsters and they need to be wiped out. Morty goes in with stealth to steal the baby back. Summer follows with bow and arrow drawn to provide backup. Jerry and Beth follow Summer to give her backup. An ogre guard comes around a corner and spots Morty. Summer overreacts, shouting Die, giant scum, and lets loose an arrow into the ogre's back. The alarm is sounded, which brings an ogre shaman running to engage Jerry and various guards to engage the rest of the family, while the couple slips into a building. The family are overwhelmed by too many ogres when Jerry makes the desperate decision to blow the dam, which saves them all, but does some significant damage to the village. Sebastian and Lucy emerge from the building, and they are totally evil. They have the shard of Beltran in their hands and an ogre baby. They state the shard and the baby prophecy of darkness will be fulfilled. Six shall fall, six shall rise. Blood will rain down from the sunless skies. Beth and Jerry realize they made a really big mistake. The mother of the ogre baby rises out of the water shouting, Mia Mo Baba! As the evil couple go all sling-ringy and teleport away. They look around the devastated village and Jerry asks, Are we the bad guys now? To be continued.
Pretty good one.
Yes. It is not going to be the first time that heroes get duped into helping bad guys. But I did not see that coming.
Yeah, coming to find out the nice blonde couple are the bad guys and the malformed ogres are the good guys.
Exactly.
What a twist.
Yes. Sebastian and
Lucy.
There you go. Those are nice people names.
Mm-hmm. But they're not nice people.
No.
They stole the baby.
Yeah. And speaking of that, when they do come out of the building, and now they look totally different. So they are over the top evil. You can tell it. I mean, there's lots of mustache twirling going on here. And they have a lot of exposition. That does serve to set up the high stakes that are going to happen. So anyway, I thought that was pretty good. A big turn.
Yeah. And when I read this the first time, I didn't catch that it was Sebastian and Beth doing the little chant, the blood will rain from sunless skies. When I read it the first time, I thought it was Sebastian and Lucy saying it. But then, you know, after I read issue 4 and now going back and looking at issue 3, I'm like, oh, that's Beth.
Yeah.
Which will play in later. But mm-hmm. I should have picked up here that Beth already knew what this prophecy was.
Yes. Next issue.
Yeah. But they set it up nice and I didn't even catch
it. They did. Very cool. So now there are stakes. There is an innocent baby involved. So that's always a good thing. You know, a family member, and even worse, a baby, a defenseless baby. And now we got this shard thing that's going to supposedly have magical powers to do bad things, whatever all this means. So, yep. It's a more high-stakes story than I was expecting out of this series.
Right.
And supposedly, they're in a real place, like a real planet, right? I mean, that's what they were saying.
Yeah, this is a real planet that just happens to be exactly like the Forgotten Realms in D&D.
Right. And so like any real planet, they can die there. It's not like it's a simulation.
Right. No hard light constructs here.
Exactly.
These are real ogres and stuff that they're killing.
There you go.
which makes it even more sad.
It is.
Like, they're really killing people.
Yeah. And Summer turns it up a notch in the next issue. But boy, she's a racist poophead in this one.
Right.
And it gets worse in the next one.
Right. And if you think about it, knowing that they're now the bad guys, I mean, she does kill that guy that's just guarding his own, you know, he's guarding his own village, you know, and she stabs him in the back with the arrow, and
right,
yeah, that's hard to walk back from. If it's not just a game, if it's real life.
Exactly. That's right. You're taking a real life, even though it's a ogre.
Right. Now, you talked about the artwork of Sebastian and Lucy changing after they get the baby or whatever. But really, it's just their mouths get wider. But it's not an uncommon look for Rick and Morty, their art style, because they often have weird mouths with tiny little teeth, which I always thought makes everybody in that universe look a little evil.
Okay, well, that... Okay, good data point, but I mean, their eyebrows are arched, their eyes are bugging out of their head in the case of Sebastian, and yes, the mouth, but, and then Lucy's got the really evil arched eyebrows, and they're just, and everything they're saying, it's totally over the top.
Yeah, no, I agree with you on what they're saying, and I agree with you that they're trying to look evil, but I'm also trying to say that I recently watched the anime of Rick and Morty, the first two issues.
Yeah.
And in it, because I haven't watched Rick and Morty in a while, so watching it, there's so many scenes where Rick, Morty, Summer, there's a new love interest in it. They all, you know, they're all drawn with these little, like, needle teeth. And at first I was taken aback, like, oh, are these evil versions of them? And then I'm like, oh, no, I guess that's an art style that happens in the old show, too, where they just... Depending on the shot, they'll either have teeth that are all connected or they'll have teeth that are separated and look kind of needly.
Well, everybody's got Klingon teeth, are you saying? In the normal Rick and Morty.
Yeah.
Huh.
Go back and watch it again.
I don't recall ever noticing that.
I hadn't either until I watched the anime and I noticed it there. And then I went back and kind of looked at some pictures of the old show and I'm like, oh, it's always been there.
Huh. Okay.
I guess I was just too busy laughing at the original show. And
to realize they had Klingon teeth.
Yeah, and then the new anime show, it's not funny, so I notice stuff more. It's not a comedy.
Well, the anime... Okay, you actually watched it. I watched the beginning of the first... Yeah, you know, the first one. Mm-hmm. And then it's like... It's not the same art style at all.
No.
I mean, you can tell it's Rick and Morty, of course. Right. But it's different.
Mm-hmm.
And then as I jumped around the video of it, it's different.
Right.
And you actually watched them and I did not. So I suppose I'll get back to them, but it looked quite a bit different than the American version, which is fine. Just very different.
But anyways, so real quick, going back to your discussion of the Dungeon Master. When he is in that classic
little
red robe,
little troll guy, or whatever.
That's Dungeon Master from the old cartoon.
I don't know what you're talking about. The old cartoon?
I knew you didn't. What that is. It was so embarrassing, Ken. So embarrassing.
Okay.
No.
So there was a kid's there was a, TV
yeah,
show? There was,
yeah, animated cartoon, Saturday morning cartoon series of Dungeons and Dragons, and he was the Dungeon Master. So, like, even when you were talking about the cover and you were like, oh, it's some little
hobbit.
Little hobbit dude with a red dress on, and I'm like, oh my God, you don't know who he is. That's Dungeon Master.
No, I don't. I'm an adult. I don't know who that is.
Yes,
I'll be able to comment on kids TV shows when I was a kid, but past or maybe when my kids were kids, but beyond that, no.
Yeah, so there's that little gap from when I was a kid to when your kids were kids that you are completely oblivious to, and that's when this
I
came
will
in.
Agree with that.
Yeah, because they make some more references. Well, they make another reference to it here too. The portal that they walk through is also from that cartoon. That's the portal that the kids, they're riding a roller coaster and they go through this mouth and then they end up teleporting to Dungeons and Dragons.
Oh,
so it was kind of cool that the device that teleports them to this world is also the same one.
Well, you know, when I was reading the book and I saw that they went through that, I thought, well, that's kind of odd. I mean, why wouldn't Rick just do a normal portal like normal?
Right.
But it's like, okay, Dungeons and Dragons, fine. But it turns out there's more to it.
Yep.
Very interesting.
Anyways, I thought it was cool. And then there's another big nod to it in the next issue, which we'll get to in a little bit.
Which I'm oblivious of also, so please do point out.
Yeah, that one's the next one's a little less obvious. Okay. It's not actually a plot point to the story.
Cool.
So anyways, I did a lot of talking. You go ahead and make some comments.
Oh, no. I like how Jerry, for once, is elevated from being the butt of every other joke to being kind of a capable leader hero type.
Oh, that's great. Loved it. I loved it.
And then now, of course, Rick is flipped. And so now he's a sniffling little bard who, of course, is the last character type he would ever want to be. And he does not have all the answers and he has no power or very little power. Anyway.
Right. And he's pouty. So he didn't get his way. Pouty. So now he's just like, you know, right. I'm not going to do anything. You know, he's the kid that takes the baseball and bat home because he didn't get picked for the right team. So
he's drinking booze out of the Boda bag, or maybe he does that in the next issue, but he does. As Morty and Jerry are getting along so well, they just have a little on the side shot of Rick just saying, "And I just threw up a little." So he's just pathetic. He is pathetic.
Which I thought was funny because he's always throwing up and having, you know, drool running down his face in the cartoon. So I wouldn't think that drooling.
He's drooling.
But it's green, so I always think it's throw up. Well, that's usually, why I didn't watch the show for the longest time.
It's usually white, but okay.
Is it? I thought it was always green.
Well, there's multiple places in this book where you can see the drool coming out of his mouth. That's before he was converted into a little guy, a bard. And it's not green. It's spittle.
Okay. Yeah.
Which is bad enough, but
yeah. Yeah. Anyways, he's just not he's not getting into the game.
Right.
And Jerry is, and he's nailing it.
Yeah. Okay, here's another thing I want to say, if I may. And I'm going to come back to this in the next issue, but I just want to comment that this is supposedly a real world that happens to be just like Dungeons & Dragons. Okay. Having ogres and that kind of stuff and other kind of creatures, okay, that's fine, that's fine. But it's also got a dungeon master. Now, mind you, I guess I'll acknowledge, how could you have Dungeons & Dragons without a dungeon master? But still, this guy is shifting forms, form shifting, from somebody that probably does look appropriate for Dungeons & Dragons into a teenage kid with a baseball cap and I don't know what kind of t-shirt he's got on. And then also he shapeshifts into like a teenage girl elf something.
Mm-hmm.
So on the one hand, it's supposed to be like a real place. And on the other hand, they got all this magic stuff going on, which right. doesn't seem very real.
Right. But with the cartoon, I mean, there was a dungeon master in there too, and he would kind of guide them, and he wouldn't really interfere, but he would definitely set it up, and then he had, you know, he would disappear and whatnot. So
okay, and again, that was supposed to be a real place. That was supposed to be a real place in the cartoon.
Yeah, kind of like this. They went from the real world to the Dungeons and Dragons world.
Okay, so it's sounding like this. This graphic novel, this series of four issues, are very modeled after that TV show.
A little bit, yeah.
Interesting.
But I kind of liked the the kid with the baseball cap and the black shirt. So the black shirt has the and symbol from the Dungeons and Dragons logo.
Okay.
And then the shirt has a Critical Role logo from So Critical Role's a really popular YouTube type thing where they play Dungeons and Dragons.
Okay.
I think what's her name? The girl from Sing Along Blog. What's her name? Day.
Dr. Oracle Sing Along Blog.
Yeah. What's her last name? Claudia Day.
I forgot, because she's in a lot of things.
Yeah, yeah.
But so she originally came from this
I think
YouTube channel?
Maybe. There's a chance.
She was involved with it anyway.
She's involved with something. She's either involved with it or something just like it. But yeah.
Okay.
So anyways, I like that, you know, he's switching from what the cartoon considered a dungeon master to what YouTube considers a dungeon master.
What would be a real dungeon master.
Yeah, and then the goth girl with the elf ears.
There you go. Right.
She's based on somebody because I've seen that girl somewhere. So I don't know if she's also famous and they're kind of basing it on her.
Maybe.
But,
I mean, except for the elf bits, she reminds me a little bit of that girl who was in the that hobby thing in the first issue.
Oh, right, right. Yeah, at first I thought that's who it was supposed to be, but then I was like, I don't think that's her.
No, I don't think it is either. But they both have like the same earring on their lower lip or something. I don't know.
Mm. So anyways, I like that. I like that it keeps changing to what's considered a dungeon master.
Right. And that's fine. It's just,
takes you out of it.
Well, no, it's just like they're trying to have it both ways.
Yeah.
Which I have more to say in the next issue, but which is fine. It's a story. What do you want? That's all made up. Fine.
It's a Rick and Morty story.
Just really, just relax.
That's really considered canon or
real
series.
Or canon. And there you go. Yeah, it's just a story. Whatever.
So in the cartoon, does Rick not have arms? So does he have guns and stuff
arms
that pop out of his elbows?
No. Well, at least I don't remember ever seeing it before.
Okay. I mean, he does it here a lot.
Well, I know. And that was kind of surprising to me. So he's looking like he's cybernetic or something.
Right.
Which, there could have been other ones where he had some cybernetic kind of thing, but never where he would, where his arm would fold back at the elbows and expose a freeze ray.
Right.
No, I've never seen that before.
Okay. Yeah, I know you've seen more of the show than I have, so I thought, well, maybe that was something I just don't remember.
Yeah, I don't remember ever seeing that, but usually he just pops out ray guns out of nowhere and
yeah,
whatever. Maybe that side dimension backpack he's got, which is a allusion to what Star Trek. It was that game back in like the 90s or whatever, maybe 2000s. Where you were a Starfleet security person trying to make their way through a story. Anyway.
Okay.
You would swap your weapons. I know.
Elite Forces. The
Elite
Voyager.
Force,
the Voyager Elite Forces. Okay, okay. I know what you're talking about now.
Elite Force. That's it.
Yeah, where your weapons are in a little pattern buffer on your belt.
Yeah, something like that. But at least they gave an explanation how you could swap between, you know, significant weapons that you just happen to have. Anyway, whatever. So I think Morty looks really cool in his little half orc whatever thief guy outfit.
Right.
So finally he looks cool.
You didn't like him as a bald bard?
Yeah. Who looks like he could have been played by Danny DeVito.
Danny DeVito, yeah, I could see that.
No. And he even had Picard hair, so no.
I like him here.
And then
I really enjoyed this issue. I enjoyed all of their new looks.
Yeah. Yeah, everybody looks good.
They kind of went all in on the half-elf thing.
Yes.
Everybody's
a half elf.
Yeah.
Or would Morty's half ogre?
Yeah, he's half ogre, and then the parents are both elves, different kinds of elves.
There you go. Yeah. Okay.
I mean, there are other races.
Yes. And of course, Beth is a
wood elf.
Right. But her look is. There were two actresses that played elves in the Lord of the Rings things.
Yeah, Liv Tyler and Kate Blanchett.
Oh, Kate Blanchett, yes. So Beth went for the sexier one, the Liv Tyler one. Okay. That's all I got to say.
That's it?
That's it. What else you got?
Well, I just want to just make a comment in general, because they do it here and they do it in the next issue. But mm-hmm. I really like just the throwaway lines about the game itself, mm-hmm. where they're talking about how they have to prepare spells mm-hmm. and, you know, enchant their arrows and things like that. Because that's all part of the game that you can have so many spells prepared already before you go into battle and things like that. And they just like make little offhand comments about, oh, make sure you prepare your spells. And then you see Summer doing it to her arrows and stuff. I just thought that was kind of cool.
Yeah. And I think it's the next issue where they talk about having to rest for a while.
Yeah, and a long rest.
To replenish their powers or something.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, and you have to eat and all that stuff. Otherwise, you start taking hunger damage and things like that. Yeah. I mean, it's just kind of cool that they're just throwing some of this stuff in the background.
Yeah, that's good.
And then my last comment is the Bullywog, the frog guy. With the spear.
Okay.
For whatever reason, I love Bullywogs. Out of all the miniatures I've painted the most Bullywogs, and I don't know why. I just, for whatever reason, a frog with a weapon is just, to me, is just so funny. I gotta have it.
I'm digging the names they got for all these things. A Bullywog. That's great.
Right. All right, that was my last comment. All right, so move on.
Please.
All right, so issue 4 has a cover date of December of 2018. There's also 4 covers of this. The main one, the Troy Little cover, just shows our band of heroes in an alley somewhere getting ready. Then there is a cover that looks like the character sheet for G. Willikers Pedal Butt, which is the Rick character. Then there's a cool cover with Mike Vasquez, and it shows Rick being held by a giant green dragon, which is kind of cool. And then the last cover is by Tess Fowler, and it shows Sebastian and Lucy on top of like a dais or whatever, and then we see a bunch of little captive children, and then our party is sneaking up on them, but looking very worried. So the story starts right where the last one ended, where our band of adventurers have just unwittingly become the bad guys and destroyed a half-ogre village and allowed Lucy and Sebastian to take one of the town's crystals and a little baby. Summer takes some convincing, but they all eventually agree to find the stolen items and make right what they did wrong. Rick does not have any remorse for the loss of the baby and even makes light of the magical item that was stolen. And then he's even berated by not only the family, but also the elders of the town that say, you know, a baby's been lost. You know, that's the most important thing for a family. You know, their world is now destroyed. Which I really, really liked. As the team head out, Jerry fills them in on the lore of the magical items. Then suddenly he rolls a bad arcana roll and he forgets. So in the game, you have to roll to see if you remember stuff or if you could figure stuff out. And he was obviously rolling good. And then all of a sudden he rolled bad and we're just kind of stuck with what he's already told us. But anyways, basically they know that the baby and Crystal are being used for an apocalyptic event that's going to be happening soon. Actually, it's going to be happening in the very next night. And Rick is very bitter about a few things. And there's like a long list of stuff he's mad about. So one, he's upset with the plot on how convenient everything is. And then, you know, the big event just happens to be tomorrow, you know, when it only happens every 100 years or something, but just happens to be tomorrow when we just happen to be here, you know, that kind of thing. And then he's also mad about how Beth says that she has a backstory where she remembers the prophecy that Sebastian was saying in the last issue. And now that has given the DM something to use as a plot point going forward. He calls it Chekhov's gun, and Morty makes an awesome Star Trek connection. Which I thought was great. Summer also has a backstory which involves her hating ogres for killing her brother and all this other stuff. So she's having to get over that. And obviously, again, Rick just does not like these backstories. And then lastly, Rick's taking out all his frustrations on the DM, who now reappears. But the Dungeon Master points out that, you know, the Dungeon Master is not the antagonist. You know, he's just there to provide the framework so that the players can create their own adventures, and that Rick is the only one hurting the game because he's resisting. So Summer goes out on patrol as the others are resting, and she finds the mother of the taken child who's been following them. Summer begrudgingly sees her point and gives the mother her assurances that she will do everything she can to bring the baby back. The next day, they make it to the town of Greyhold. Jerry meets with a dragonborn librarian, while Morty goes out to the seedier side of the village, and he finds out where the kidnappers are hiding out. So then we find out that he has a backstory, that he actually grew up in the slums of this exact town. They find their way to the hideout, and when they're there, they see a teleportation circle. So this circle takes them to the dungeon where the kidnappers have escaped to. And then we have a montage of lots of adventures and close calls within the dungeons. And they eventually make their way to where the evil duo is about to sacrifice these babies in order to perform the ritual. Summer keeps her word to the ogre mother and sacrifices herself to take out Lucy. And then the others are able to take out Sebastian and save the babies. They return to the town and reunite the family. They get medals. They have a funeral for Summer. And then the Dungeon Master returns them back home. So once they're home, Rick tells them that Summer is really gone, and that he can either go out to another dimension and bring another Summer, or he can try to clone her, but it'll never be the same Summer. Morty is completely heartbroken. But then Summer walks in carrying a can of soda, and she bemoans about how long it took all the rest of them to get back. So she thinks that she came back just because when she died and because it was a game, then she came back. But then Rick and Jerry have a little sidebar, and we find out that the only reason why she's back is that Jerry used a spell to return her to her correct dimension, because he would never trust anybody, including the Dungeon Master, for the safety of his own children. So the story wraps up with Morty running out to play D&D with the girls from the earlier issues. Jerry and Beth go upstairs for a little role-playing of their own. And then Summer runs a homebrew D&D game for her grandpa Rick. The end.
Yay, everybody! A happy ending. Although, like a lot of really good movies and stories, there is a death, which gives weight to the ending, which, of course, is totally undone later.
So. Right. Yeah, and it doesn't, I mean, when I say that she sacrifices herself, I mean, it shows her laying on the ground, her, it's she doesn't have a bottom part, and her just guts are hanging out. And
her entrails.
Like, did I save the baby? And then she dies. Just like, yeah, man, I didn't know. I mean, I knew she wasn't going to be dead, but wow. And then you see like Beth just crying. Like, I mean, it was for being a Rick and Morty comic. It was pretty emotional, I thought.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was referring to at the beginning of the episode. So yeah. there was a lot more stakes and weight to thing and to the story. And then the big redemption arc of Summer ending in her, I mean, she was hating the ogres. I mean, she was a racist, hateful MAGA Summer. And she was just going off, and it was like, what are they doing? And they're like overboard on how much, you know, how much she hates all these ogres. And they thinks they're all murderers, even the babies. And it's like, what are they doing all this for? And then it's like, oh, it's a redemption arc. Okay. Right. And then she makes the ultimate sacrifice. It's like, oh, wow. Okay. I know I've seen this before in a movie or something before, but they're doing this really well.
Right. Yeah.
But then at the end, they just undo everything. Ah. And then, yeah. Okay, so it,
yeah. No, go ahead.
Well, I just want to say, okay, so the reason that it was done is what a banishment spell. So Jiri uses something that apparently exists, I guess, in D&D, a banishment spell, but instead of banishing her to some other place, it banishes her back to her home plane of existence. Well, isn't that convenient?
Right.
Anyway, so, you know, it's kind of cool they tied it into something that apparently exists in D&D, and it was only through Jerry's knowledge of the game that he was able to use that and save his daughter. But then that gets back to what I was talking about before, about having it both ways.
Right.
Oh, this is a real place. It's a real planet. You can really die. But then they have all this magic stuff going on, and they used a banishment spell to undo her death. So it's like, anyway, it was bugging me.
And what's funny is that in that page where we think that Summer really is dead, you know, we see Morty. He is crying so bad.
Oh, bad.
And then we see Beth and Jerry, you know, holding each other, crying as well. But why would Jerry be crying? Because he knows that he teleported her back.
Well, maybe he thought, well, okay.
It didn't work.
Well, okay. So there was definitely the part where her entrails were out.
Oh.
And then Jerry was, you know, very sad or whatever. I mean, and then you see she's dead, and then you see Jerry speaking some mystic language or something. You can't, I mean, the dialogue box is all, the word box is all gibberish. And then Beth goes, what? And then Rick looks surprised too. Anyway, and then they move on with the story.
Right.
So when I first read it, I didn't see that at all. I didn't notice any of that. I'm just blissfully going forward. And so I came back to that. And then that, okay, so that made it a little better. Okay, so Jerry, obviously, he really did something, and they showed him do it.
Right.
And then after that, so he was crying after he did the spell?
Yeah, if you look on the page where they come back home, and you see Beth being held by Jerry, Jerry's also crying.
Okay.
So maybe he thought it didn't work, I don't know.
Okay, that or else it's just blatant manipulation.
Exactly.
On the part of the writers, yes.
Right. You know, just like all the Star Trek comic books we read, we know they're not going to do any major killing off of a character in a comic book. Right. So you knew she was okay. Well, actually, you know what? With Rick and Morty, you never know that because they do just go out and get a different one from another universe. Or
Well, they died. I mean, our original Rick and Morty died and in one episode, and now we're in a different dimension.
Right. They kill the Rick and Morty, or no, the Rick and Morty of that dimension died, so they just took over their bodies or their lives. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And it's close enough. I think at the end they said something like, close enough.
Yeah.
But at least they talked about that, you know, when they talked about, I can't bring her back, or I can grab another Summer, but she won't be the same. The memories won't be there. And
Right. No, yeah. I like that.
So that was
good. And I love that the super confident Jerry's still here for a bit. And he's like, I would never trust anybody with the safety of my children. And I'm like, that's a good dad right there. Not what we normally see out of Jerry.
No. Well, he's inept, but I'm sure that's his emotional feelings on fatherhood. It's just that normally he's so inept, you never see it.
Yeah, he even says that, you know, with this new persona, he's able to articulate how he really feels where he usually can't. So I guess it's good for Beth that he still has the persona for a little bit. She obviously seems to be digging him.
Yeah, exactly. And if I may just say briefly, or taking that idea and just extending it, the way they ended, they made it look like Rick was going to be all alone, just sitting at the dinner table or whatever, screwing around with a D&D thing or whatever. And so it was great that they had Summer come back, and then they, you know, they do an old school D&D thing together. That's cool. Yeah. And then the very last thing they're saying is, sometimes it's nice to pretend you're someone different for a little while. Sometimes it's nice to take a break from who you really are, which seems to be, you know, one of the main thrusts of what people like about Dungeons and Dragons.
Right.
So I really like how they kind of distilled the game, one of the things that makes it most popular, and that's how they end the story. So I kind of like that.
No, I did too.
Yeah. So do you know why they put the title of the fourth story
at the end?
The very end instead of at the beginning of the fourth part four?
No, do you?
In the novel? I don't know.
Yeah, I really don't.
No, I thought that was very surprising.
Yeah, it wasn't until I got to the end that I was like, oh yeah, that's right. There was no chapter number and title at the beginning.
Yeah, they did have one of those pages that has like cover art kind of thing.
Yeah.
Between the two, but I was looking for the title. Cause I was like getting towards the end, you know, cause I'm reading and synopsizing the third story, and I'm looking for the end, which I always use the title of the story as that.
Oh, I see.
But that wasn't there. So it was like, well, I assume this is the end. And it was, but it's
I'm
just
glad
like,
you assumed that.
I assumed it partially because of the full page.
Yeah, you know, I'm glad they stuck bordered. That cover in there.
Exactly, right. But then at the last page, when I finally finished the story, it's like, hey, the part titles are the last page. What? Anyway. They're messing with us.
So the D&D cartoon connection in this one was when they're heading off towards the hideout that Sebastian and Lucy are staying in the city. It shows them going up some stairs, and then at the foot of the stairs we see a wizard and a cavalier knight and a little barbarian. Those are all characters. Yeah. Those are all characters from the cartoon. So the blonde-haired kid and the little boy and the wizard and all that. Those are all the main characters from the cartoon.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah, I thought it was kind of odd. I mean, they're walking up these really steep Escher almost like stairs to get to the door, and then they have all these characters like
with their arms out and stuff. Yeah,
their arms out, like they're trying to get them to do something or something. And it's like, well, who are all these people? I had no idea.
I knew who they were, but I didn't understand why all their arms were hanging out and stuff like that.
Right.
I mean, but that's who they were. And they actually had a little cameo in the Chris Pine Dungeons and Dragons movie, if you remember. Did you
with
see
these
that
guys?
One? Yeah.
Oh yeah, I saw that. That was a good
movie.
So
when they were in the maze, the Hugh Grant maze at the end, remember there was like a couple of different groups that were in cages, and then the cages opened up and then they all went out at the same time. These band of adventurers was in one of the caves.
Oh,
or one of the cages. Okay. So it just showed them for like a second, and then later I think it shows them one other time really quick. So it's kind of cool that they're, you know, they're giving a little tip of the hat to the old cartoon that, you know, for a lot of kids that was their first introduction to Dungeons and Dragons.
So how many seasons did that show go?
I think it ran two or three seasons. It didn't do a lot because that was also during the big satanic panic where, you know, moms were against Dungeons and Dragons because it was causing their kids to become Satanists and stuff like that. So it didn't stay on as long as it probably would have if that didn't happen.
Oh. No, that's too bad. Okay. Well, but three seasons, two or three seasons, I mean...
Yeah,
it's
I think
better
it was
than one
two.
And done.
I don't think it was three. I think it was just two.
Okay.
And then it ended on a cliffhanger because, you know, they were planning on doing another season and didn't get it.
Okay. There you go.
So I did like that it does show what's his name?
Dungeon Master?
Nah, I was trying to think of what Rick's character's name was, but we'll just call him Rick. But he's finally using the bard power at the end of the right at the end of the book. Shows him zapping one of the trolls or something with the power of the loot.
Yeah, right. He's got it looks like he's got a loot pick in his hand and everything. And he's just done a real good chord, which is zapping a bad guy. And since you're mentioning that drawing, I very much appreciate that rather than drawing this out over pages, they just had one page, which has two panels overlapping it at the very top, but one page that is actually labeled Final Encounter that really just kind of summarizes the whole big fight at the end.
Right, right.
And then they move on. I think that's great.
Yeah.
I like how Morty and Beth are poised to totally kill Sebastian. I think that's awesome.
He deserved it.
Exactly. And you got the babies, like all kind of floating with crystals, green crystals now above their head. Used to be red crystals, now they're green. And I think
the
there's
event's
a lot of
happening now. That's why it changed colors.
Okay, that's
just
showing
of course. That it's about to happen.
That's why it went from red to green. Okay, makes
exactly.
Right.
Yeah,
makes
sense. It's all canon.
It's all canon. Okay.
So that's my last comment. What else did you have?
I just have a few little things. Towards the end, there's when you mention about Jerry getting all protective Papa and he's got his fists up. I noticed he's got five different rings on his fingers. And then I was like, oh, is that a sling ring? You know, like a Doctor Strange slash Ned sling ring.
Right.
And it's like, no, they're just regular rings. Because his right, there's another panel that his hand is open and it looks like normal rings.
Right. Yeah, they're just normal rings.
I was just thinking, hey, is that sling ringy? Mm-hmm. But no. But five rings, that's kind of odd. Maybe that's common for wizards, but I thought it was a little odd. We already talked about Summer's redemption arc. Oh, you mentioned the Star Trek joke. That's great. And so,
the Chekhov's gun.
Exactly. So it's the whole, okay. So Beth by the campfire goes ahead and adds to her own backstory, but she says it in a perfectly earnest way and is talking about her prophecy. There's a prophecy about the, 10 rise, 10 fall or whatever the number is. And she makes it part of her backstory. And then Rick totally is pissed off and says, you put a prophecy in your backstory? What were you thinking? And it's like, because I played D&D like maybe three times at a kid's camp. But nobody did that. But okay, so I know the Dungeon Master makes up stuff as he goes along. But part of the game is you make stuff up about yourself, too, as a player in your own backstory and maybe other kinds of things. Who knows? Yep. So everybody's making stuff up as they go. And I didn't realize that the players, the non-DM players, do that kind of thing, too. So I thought, that's cool.
Right. Yeah, no, that's what's great about it is that you come up with your own story and explain how you got there. You know, like, how did you end up with these lot, that kind of thing with all the other characters. Right. And then, then the DM picks up on that and then starts weaving in, characters from your past, or something like that, that just become part of the natural flow of the story.
Yeah, that's great. It's all everybody getting together to make a story. That's great.
Right.
And then, again, so Rick goes on to say, it's not cool. It's a loaded gun. It's Chekhov's prophecy, which obviously the great Russian writer must have had something in one of his great novels that had to do with prophecy. I'm not literate enough to know what that is. And of course, when I saw Chekhov's prophecy, the first thing I immediately thought of was Pavel Chekhov.
Yeah, of course.
Immediately I did that. And then Morty gives voice to that. How cool is that?
Yeah.
There are prophecies in Star Trek? It's like, yes. Yes.
Now, the very first time I heard of Chekhov's gun, because that's what it's called. It's called Chekhov's gun. Yeah, because in the original play, there was a gun that was in Act 1. And then because it was established in Act 1, it has to factor in the finale, you know, that kind of thing.
Okay.
So that's what it means. But yeah, when I first heard it too, I had no idea, and I was like, "What does Star Trek have to do with this?"
Yeah, I thought that was really good.
Yeah, it's good. But yeah, now that you know it, you'll see it everywhere. You'll be like, "Oh, okay, that pitchfork was in that one scene, so it'll probably factor in later." And then, sure enough, there it is. Okay. You know, that's how they snap the monster or whatever.
Okay. And my last thing to say is, when Sebastian and Lucy turn all evil, in my head, and then as I was writing notes down, I said mustache twirling, because they were like some snidely whiplash. Tie the maiden to the train track kind of over the top villains with no obvious reason or motivation why they were so evil, but just that they're evil. And doggone it, they're going to be the best evil they can be. And I thought to myself, mustache twirling. And then that was before I read the fourth issue. And then here Rick is saying, seriously, Summer, were you even paying attention? And then they did everything but twirl their effing mustaches and tie little Nell to a train track. It's like, yes! Exactly what I thought.
Yeah, I thought that was funny.
Thought that was good.
So what was Summer's ranger name?
Oh, my God. They're all unnecessarily long. I don't remember exactly. I'd have to go back to a previous issue.
Yeah, so...
Or maybe the third issue?
Remember in the first issue, she kept calling herself Witchblade or something like Witchblade? But that's what it looks like that's on her gravestone. But that wasn't her character. Gravestone. That wasn't her second character's name. Her second character's name was...
It should have been in the third story, right?
Yeah, her second character's name was Ari Strongbow.
Okay.
But if you look at that graveside, gravestone...
It's Witchblade.
It looks like the Witchblade name. It doesn't quite make out words when you zoom in on the Comixology site, but...
And that's not the right logo.
Right, but it's close.
Right.
But anyways...
I think you're right, though. Ari something or other.
Yeah.
So. Otherwise known as Witchblade. What?
It wasn't Witchblade, because that's the real character's name.
No, it was. Wasn't it Witchblade?
Nah, Witchblade's a comic book character.
Well, I know that. But, okay, well, what was the logo? What was the logo then?
Her name was Winterblade.
Oh, Winterblade. That's it. Yeah. Sorry. Winterblade. Yeah.
So anyways, just the gravestone looks more like that logo than her Strongbow character.
Okay. Cool.
Anyways, anything else?
So good story. Nothing else.
I do think more of the ogres would be dead with the with that dam being destroyed and flooding the city. Yeah. I think it would have pretty much taken them all out. But
well, you know, talk about Chekhov's gun or whatever. When you first see that high up picture of the village, and then they've got a stone walled up dam like right there, like almost over the village. It was like, wow, talk about setting something up you're gonna see later.
Right. And you did. And only two pages later.
There you go. Jerry pulled that plug.
Anyway. All right. Anything else?
No. I did enjoy that. Now, there is a second volume out there, which we are not going to do, at least now, but perhaps sometime in the future when we're light on Star Trek comics, we may return to this concept.
But we do have a couple of Star Trek books that we'll be able to do next week, which is the two ongoing. So we got, Star Trek issue 23 and then Defiant issue number 18.
Right. Excellent.
So looking forward to it. That's where lore comes back into Preloma or whatever, right?
Right. Yeah, so we got multiple things going on. We got that going on. And then in Defiant, we've got the whole thing where the crew is the Romulans.
Yeah, they're on the run from the Romulans because they've stolen the Praetor, right?
Yeah, they got the Praetor, and then they've got another guy who's high up in the government.
Yeah, and the head of the Tal Shiar.
Oh, okay. There you go. So that's pretty high.
Yeah.
So they've got most of the three members of the crew have that, and then they got Spock in a prison, imprisoned.
Right. And Miles O'Brien has gotten a mystery message to come help them.
Exactly. So I think both stories have some really good what's going to happen next stuff going on.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to these next two issues.
Yeah. I really hate being caught up and having to wait a whole month to get to the next issues, you know, because I want to know what happened.
It's your binge watching thing.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I'm just not used to us being caught up, you know, so it's just like,
right.
Anyways, all right, well, we'll do that next week then.
Thanks, everybody, for joining us on The Review.
Later.
Thank you for listening to Star Trek Comic Book Review. All Star Trek stories and characters are copyrighted CBS Studios Incorporated. All music, stories, and characters discussed are for entertainment purposes only. You can email us at startcomicbookreview@gmail.com. Visit us at our website, www.stcomicbookreview.com. Subscribe to us via iTunes or friend us on Facebook at First Name ST Comic, Second Name Book Review. See you next time on Star Trek Comic Book Review.
Let's get the hell out of here.